You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games, only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
So this week we got something special, since this episode will come out right before Veterans Day. We smoked the new Brotherhood series from Camacho, the Shellback.
Which is kind of ironic, because even taken outside the Veterans Day thing, it still ties into our main segment quite well as well.
Yeah. And for anyone who doesn't know, Shellback is a term for a sailor or marine who has crossed the equator for the first time. And it's like a big ceremony they do on ships and whatever. And then, you know, once you've earned that, you are considered a shellback.
Yep. So this cigar here is going to sport a Habano Ecuadorian wrapper.
Which is on the equator.
Yep. Nicaraguan binder and Nicaraguan filler from Esteli.
Yeah, and the labeling on it's cool too, because it's you know, a black and green label, but then it has a like trident, the, and it has like looks like a topographic map. It's kind of an interesting.
I don't know. I'm kind of digging band. The you know, crosshairs, you know, with the scorpions in the center. That's kind of cool. So yeah, I mean this cigar. I'm gonna say for me, this is probably a more of a medium cigar, getting just a very slight, you know, spice, a little bit of pepper, but mostly earthy notes is what I'm picking up.
Yeah, it definitely starts out pretty medium. It's supposed to be a medium to full bodied in strength, and has, you know, kind of notes of black pepper, exotic spice, sweet cedar, and earth. But yeah, this, like I said, I've been digging a lot of the Camachos lately, and this is a new series they're doing. They just introduced it at this year's IPCPR. So this is like one of the first of the new Brotherhood series, which will be honoring, you know, the military and the country. I think one of their other ones they're coming out with is the Liberty is the other one from the Brotherhood series.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, so far I'm you know, only about a I don't know, maybe a third into the cigar, and I mean, it's definitely got a lot of flavor, a lot of, you know, well balanced. You know, I mean, I'm definitely digging this smoke right now.
Yeah, one of the cool things was when I went to pick these up at the cigar shop in Cumming, I was talking to the owner, Tim, and he was asking me if I knew what, you know, shellback meant. And I was like, yeah, I did my research. But apparently, he sent a box of these to the USS Georgia, which is a nuclear submarine. So there's a box of these on the sub, and he was showing me a box of stuff. They sent him like a challenge coin and a picture of the sub with the crew and a, you know, a little thank you letter and stuff. I was like, so I thought that was pretty cool. And he's sent some to some other like military units too. So yeah, the cigar shop's always a very pro military establishment.
I think that's one reason we enjoy hanging out there so much.
Yeah. I mean, I'm you know, too fat and lazy to serve, but I respect everyone who does and thank them for their service.
Yeah, you get some very cool weaponry conversations going on as well.
Yeah, you meet some interesting people hanging out smoking cigars.
Absolutely.
And since we are smoking the shellback, that will tie into our main segment, which is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, yo.
Something about turtle power.
Exactly.
Heroes in a half shell.
Not to be confused with the Renaissance painters and inventors. We're talking about the other Leonardo, Michelangelo, Donatello, and Raphael.
True that. So, yep, stay tuned. It's going to be fun.
Get your ninja on.
Yeah.
five shells, turtle power.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. It's time to sharpen up your ninja swords and strap on your masks, folks. We're about to get mutated up in here.
Dude, I don't have a sword.
What about some nunchucks?
It's not noon. But this gang did want me to join this one time. It's pretty good with a bow staff.
And of course, we are talking about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. If you don't know who they are, that is Leonardo, Michelangelo, Raphael, and Donatello.
If you don't know who they are, then you probably should be listening to this podcast. Like, before you even continue this episode, pause, go find the DVDs, YouTube, Google, something, and educate yourself.
Yeah. Of course, it all started off, as most things do, as a comic book.
Yep. And this was published by...
Started off with in 1984.
Yep. By Mirage Studios is the publisher of the comic books, right?
Yes. The original Punisher. Or publisher. Punisher. Fuck. And it's kind of moved
not
back...
Not Punisher, and... Daredevil.
But, I mean, it originally was started by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. And it kind of just came out of almost like an... They were just sitting around bullshitting, trying to come up with ideas. And Laird drew this turtle character that looks nothing like the Ninja Turtles we know today or even the what ended up in the comic books. It was very cartoony realistic, like almost like, say, if you ever seen the old Warner Brothers Rabbit in the Hare thing. It looked like a regular turtle. He just happened to have a mask and nunchucks. You know, Michelangelo was officially the first turtle that he created.
And then, you know, it just, I'm going to be a smartass and write Ninja Turtle above here, and look, it turns into a thing. A very successful thing.
You know, like most things, like, you know, like this podcast, it was just a really dumb idea that someone was like, that's pretty funny, we should do something with that.
So when do we start grossing the millions that the freaking Turtle franchise has grossed?
we have to make a successful cartoon series and movie franchise.
Joe and Brad strike back or something. I don't know.
I keep saying we do the southern version of Harold and Kumar go to White Castle. We have Joe and Brad go to Crystals.
I'm in.
That's my idea. or instead of dudes, where's my car? We have dude, where's my cigar?
That could be a thing. All right, sweet. So, yeah, I mean, the comic books published in 1984, and, you know, we already talked about the humorous sketch, but, you know, the comic book origin and everything else, you know, it's funny because...
It started out kind of as a parody.
It was
supposed to parody stuff like, you know, Daredevil and some of the whatever street level ninja comics of the 80s.
You know, that's one comparison that, you know, as big of a fan as the Turtles and everything else that I am, I did not draw that comparison originally until I started going back and looking at Daredevil, and I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, like, even in the...
Marvel could have did the Turtles.
Yeah. I mean, even the comics, their original origin story, the mutagen that turned them into the Ninja Turtles was that stuff that blinded Daredevil in the comics. You know, it ran off into the sewers, and you know, that stuff was like the original ooze or whatever. It was supposed to be the same chemicals that blinded Daredevil. So in the original days, it was very, you know, related to the Marvel universe.
Absolutely. I mean, that'd be a kind of cool mashup. Like, all of a sudden, the freaking turtles show up on the Marvel universe.
What's up, Tony?
Dude, I bet
Donatello would hang with Stark, man. Those two would get along.
I mean, I could see Michelangelo even kicking it with Stark, you know? I mean, they would get into some serious shenanigans. That is an interesting mashup. I mean, there's got to be a fan film or somebody out there that's more creative than you and I that can piece this thing together and make it chronological and make it make sense.
Oh, yeah. And even to anybody who's a fan of the cartoon, which we'll talk about later, that was always more cartoony, well, comedic, because it was, of course, made for kids. But the original comics were not exactly dark, but they were you know, gritty and very, very violent.
Well, I mean, even the the first live action movie, I mean, they actually toned it down because the lady that played April O'Neil was complaining that it was too dark and too gritty, and you know, then the critics didn't like the fact because they actually had a an on-scene death and thought it was too over the top.
Yeah, the original movie, which we'll talk to here later, was closer to the comic books and like in their origin.
And when we say the live action movie, we're not talking Michael Bay's 2014.
No, we're talking about the original, old school. But yeah, even later on, in the mid 90s, Image bought the rights for a while, and Image is always known for more gritty, serious comics, create your own stuff. And I remember, and I can't remember the name of the title off the top of my head, but I read one for a little while that was Casey Jones and Raphael together on like a freaking adventure. And in that book too, man, it was so dark. I remember at one point, they're fighting like gang members and getting a car chase, and Raphael takes a couple Mac-10s and like snaps the trigger guards off so he could actually get his big fingers in the trigger, and was like blaze dual wielding Mac-10s in this battle, shooting the fuck out of everybody.
Yeah, I mean, that's one aspect that you really didn't get, from the films overall. I mean, going back and reading the comics, I mean, I don't know. I mean, both the films even being golly, nearly what? Oh my gosh!
The first one came out
two decades,
25 years ago.
Holy!
I mean, the first one came out in 1990.
Like, I'm trying to not even do the math because then I feel like an old fuck.
Yeah.
Going back and watching those movies today, I mean, to be honest, I still prefer the first three films over the Michael Bay film. And maybe because it was truer to the comic, and because
but that's one thing. If you I started off with the cartoons because they started in 87, I believe. Yeah, and going back later on after I discovered the comics, and it was like just such a different story to seeing the turtles.
Yeah, I think that's one reason that helped the franchise be so successful is the fact that they did have more the adult aspect of things in the comics and the live action films, but then you could bring in the younger generations when Saturday mornings were worth waking up to, and actually you had cartoons. And we were talking about this earlier. It was kind of crazy because after the Saturday morning cartoons, it was immediately to Soul Train, which was an interesting transition. But
that's how I learned to like rap music.
Got a lot of introductions.
But yeah, there were several changes from the comics to the cartoons. For one, in the comics, the foot soldiers are people, and when they eventually started the cartoon series, they were it's gonna be way too turned them into a robot, that way they could kill like hundreds of these things an episode and no one would really care because they were robots. And also, they also changed the origin story a little bit, because in the cartoon, Splinter was a human. He was Hamato Yoshi, who was mutated into a rat. But in the comics, he was a rat who was a pet of Hamato Yoshi and learned ninjutsu by watching him practice and then when he mutated and he trained the turtles, which that was one thing that they did in the movie. They went back to the original comic book origin, so that confused the hell out of me when I first saw that, not knowing the comic books before then.
Yeah, I think it was one of the things I didn't like about the Michael Bay film is the fact that they did change up the origin story and stuff. Yeah, I was this doesn't fit.
Yeah, when we get into that, that's probably my biggest gripe about that new movie is the redone origin story. But let's get into the thing we know most of the cartoon series. It kind of started as most things in the early 80s did, because of toys. Playmate bought the rights to produce Ninja Turtle toys, but at that time they were like, I don't know if anybody's going to know these toys from this comic book. We want a TV series to promote the toy line. Kind of like He-Man, G.I. Joe, all these other things that were basically created by a toy company to sell more toys.
So let me ask you, out of the toy collection, what was the number one coveted turtle toy for you?
I had so many freaking Ninja Turtle toys, but The turtle van was probably the most awesome, which I don't think I ever got it, but I had the turtle blimp. which is like a big, it was like a big beach ball. I mean, it was a big inflatable blimp that you blew up and had like a little plane thing that connected to the bottom that could attach. And
yeah, I mean, I love the van, and I think they released a couple of variations. Like they had one variation that would actually launch, you know, the little
pizza discs. Yeah, that was badass. And then they had, I think they even had like a sewer playset and stuff. And I remember later on in the series, they introduced, because any cartoon based on a toy series, they got to keep introducing new characters to sell new toys. But they had the robot turtle too, and that was always a badass toy.
Yeah. I don't know. I really dug the Bebop and the Rocksteady toys. You know, those were, I don't know, something about those two characters have always appealed to me. And
and they were basically like typical 80s gang member guys, like metalheads that got turned into a mutated warthog and a mutated rhino.
And I think that's, you know, being a metalhead, you know, and maybe that's what led me to be a metalhead. Maybe that was instilled in my brain at a young age, and it was just destined. Like,
oh yeah, I mean, they
you're going to like Slayer and Black Sabbath.
Oh, and of course, you know, the Shredder, you know, probably one of the best villains of all time.
You know, speaking of the parodies and everything, so you know Shredder's character was based off of a kitchen gadget, right?
Yeah.
So a freaking cheese grater is the concept behind Shredder.
At least it wasn't a paper shredder.
Because
that could have turned out totally different.
Well, I mean, you know, I think it's ironic that, you know, the turtles are so obsessed with pizza, and you can't have pizza without shredded cheese.
No. And that's probably why I'm fat now, is because I had to eat all the pizza from watching that fucking cartoon.
Dude, I as a kid, you know, I would sit there and I would try to mirror, you know, the turtles, you know, with their three fingers. So I'd always, you know, try to hold the pizza, you know, with two fingers back toward the crust, my thumb, you know, balancing like the front of the pizza, you know, so I could like mirror the turtles, like, damn it, I'm going to be a turtle. And, you know, freaking cutting out cardboard boxes and spray painting grids and stuff to try to make turtle shells for Halloween.
And that's one of the things too with the cartoon series. A lot of the stuff, now that you go back and rewatch it, especially the stuff that were, like I said, created by a toy company to sell toys, the storyline wasn't that important as long as they sold toys. But with the Ninja Turtles, it still holds up. I mean, it was very well written and, you know, pretty compelling storylines.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons it was so, like I said, I mean, it could appeal to such a diverse audience that, you know, I mean, hell, my parents would sit down and, you know, watch the Turtles. Could I get them to sit down and watch any of the animated stuff today that, you know, interests me? I doubt it.
Yeah, and it ran for a long time for a cartoon. I mean, it started in 1987 to 1996. So, I mean, I literally grew up with the Ninja Turtles because it was, you know, didn't go off the air until my junior year of high school.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the you know, the early morning cartoons. I mean, growing up, I didn't have access to cable or satellite TV or something because my parents were like, we're not going to pay for this crap. So, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that the Turtles gained so much exposure too, is being available to all audiences, yeah, you know, just through over-the-air antenna.
Yeah, and it started off as a Saturday morning cartoon, and then after its first season went to a weekly cartoon. So it was pretty much on TV every day when you get home from school. So, I mean, we were all obsessed with the Ninja Turtles, and probably one of the reasons why I got into martial arts as a kid. And yeah, I mean, I had,
yeah, I mean, I can remember going to, you know, oh, it was either Gatlinburg or Pigeon Forge. Anyway, like you go into some of these shops and you see a couple of knives, and there's always this curtain hanging up, and you could go to the back, and they would have size and nunchucks.
Yeah,
and
I mean, I had all that. I had a samurai, I had a ninja sword, I had nunchucks, a bow staff, size. About the only one that I got halfway decent at was nunchucks. I was definitely the Michelangelo because, like, yeah, the size, I never got. They're freaking difficult. But yeah, nunchucks and the ninja sword, I could spin around pretty good. But
yeah, I never got too good with the nunchucks. I had a few. I probably should have got stitches moments.
Yeah, and it was voiced by Cam Clark, Barry Gordon, Rob Paulsen, which you may know from every animated thing. I mean, Pinky and the Brain through stuff now. And
do people today know Pinky and the Brain?
Maybe.
Our listeners probably know Pinky and
James
the Brain.
James Avery, but... Pratt Fraley, Jennifer Darling, Jim Cummings. And if anyone who is, we'll talk about it here in a minute, the recent reboot, Rob Paulsen still does the voice, but he was originally... I believe Raphael. Now he's Donatello.
And I think Raphael, he was the only person to actually act and do the voices. Everybody else, I think, had voices dubbed over.
No, we're talking about the cartoon. I'm not talking about the movie yet, but
I keep jumping around.
These are the voices of that original cartoon. But yeah, the merchandising on this thing blew up. I mean, you can still go to any, not even just comic book stores, but T-shirt shops, Ninja Turtle stuff.
You go to Walmart everywhere today, and it's still Turtles.
Yeah, I mean, despite any time it's been off the air, there's always been, you know, if not toys, there's always been, you know, collectibles and T-shirts.
I would think, you know, the Star Wars franchising is up there with the Turtles. I don't really know of another, maybe Power Rangers, but I would think even Power Rangers to a lesser degree.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of anything outside of Star Wars and Turtles that had the branding, the merchandising, and everything else to that, you know, level.
Yeah. And even then, like I said, that original series spent off a bunch of different video games. I mean, the original NES Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, released by Konami in 1989. That is still probably one of the hardest games I have ever played. I mean, kids do not realize the struggle of having only 4 lives and no save points. Because literally, you had a life for every turtle. Once that turtle died, you had to pick another turtle. And, you know, once those 4 turtles were gone, nope, there's no continue codes.
There's nothing.
There's no save point. You start over at the beginning yet again. And I mean, kids do not know the struggle these days of not having a save point.
I can remember, the second or third level, you know, immediately after you get the turtle van and you're able to start navigating the city and kind of going into some of the random buildings just to, get your ass destroyed by Baxter. Yeah, I mean, I can remember making it, you know, as far as I can remember, and I'm like, you know, had to go to school or something, so I'm like, okay, I'm just going to power off the TV, I'm going to leave the game where it is, and like, while I'm at school, the game glitches or something and freezes, and, you know, it's back to starting from square one all over.
Yeah, because, I mean, we've kind of started collecting classic video games, and I saw an original copy of that for sale the other day on an old NES, and I'm like, I'm so tempted to buy it, but I'm like, I know I'll like hate myself within an hour of trying to play that game. But
weird holding a controller with just an A and B button and a start, select, and D-pad. Like that controller, after having Xbox and PS3 and everything else, does not feel natural in your hands anymore after all these years.
Oh yeah. Before we get too deep into the game, so let's talk about the villains. Of course, we talked about the Shredder being he's the main big bad guy, but Baxter Stockman, who was like an evil scientist that eventually got mutated into a fly. He was like a human with a fly head and was a complete pain in the ass. You also had Krang, the alien from, I think, Dimension X, which was a giant brain inside of a robot body.
Which was weird because originally Krang wasn't supposed to be a bad guy. So, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and then what's some other ones? I remember the Rat King or something that was like some dude that had control of all the rats in the sewer.
Yeah, I mean, there was Lord Dreg. You had freaking...
Yeah, Lord Dreg came kind of in the later years when it... After the Power Rangers came out, so they wanted to kind of make the Turtles versus Aliens was like the big bad guy. And that's when they got there was like these aliens that were from some other dimension or something, but they were all like party dudes, and they had it was like a flying 57 Chevy was their their car.
And you know, talking of Shredder, I mean, there's not just Shredder. You had Shredder, you had Ultron Shredder, you had Super Shredder, you had Tengu Shredder. Like, it's so many variations of the Shredder that it was ridiculous.
So what's your favorite villain?
I think as far as the concept, and because I love the artwork of the toy, was Krang. Krang was probably one of the most unique, and at that time, I think probably one of the most detailed, you know, toys that I can remember.
And I've seen a few cosplays too, where people have built a Krang costume, and it's always insane. And then there was also a few heroes they brought in, like I said, the aliens. I can't remember their names, but then there was a samurai rabbit. and there was, like I said, there was the robot turtle, and eventually, like I said, this spun off into three different. There was a second cartoon series, kind of in the, I believe it was like late 90s, early 2000s, where they introduced a girl character, Venus de Milo, which was a female Ninja Turtle. Because, you know, I remember back in the 90s, it got to the point where everything had to be, that was like the hardcore super political correctness. Like every cartoon had to have every single type of person represented. Even like in the Ghostbusters reboot, there was like, they had to get all diversified and stuff. So they're like, we can't have just April being the only chick now. We got to bring in a girl hero as well.
I mean, one that really stands out to me was Leatherhead, the freaking alligator dude.
Yeah.
You know, I always enjoyed his character, and
oh, and I can't believe we forgot talking about the other favorite hero from the Ninja Turtles, Casey Jones.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he was like a complete badass. I mean, dude in a hockey mask, he was like Jason Voorhees, but with ninja powers, and all his weapons were sports based. He'd beat your ass with a baseball bat and cricket, hockey sticks,
yeah,
whatever.
I mean, yeah, and we'll talk about the exchange between Ralph and Casey Jones, and
yes, and when they introduced him in the movies is excellent. And if you watch the Superpower Beatdown, where they pit superheroes against each other on YouTube in like live action battles, Casey Jones versus Kick-Ass is absolutely hilarious.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, to get back into the games, there was also several big arcade games. The original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle arcade game came out in 89 and was later released on, I believe, Super Nintendo. That one was one that cost me a lot of quarters back in the day.
I mean, dude, we went to Flashback Games. How long did we spend playing Turtles in Time?
I don't know, probably at least an hour of the time we were there.
That game really made me realize that, yeah, you've got a very bad onset of carpal tunnel in a few more years.
Yeah, the second arcade game, Turtles in Time, where you're pursuing Shredder through different time periods. And I remember there was so many little jokes. There's one where it's like a Wild West level, and it's like, bury my shell at Wounded Knee. It was like that the name of that level. And it was like a futuristic level where you were fighting these little raptor bot things that were a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about the game franchise. I mean, I remember it from original NES. I remember playing some of the arcade games, but I didn't realize how many, you know, games had come out, you know, just in the, you know, the after the new millennium. And how many reboots. I mean, you had Turtle Smash Up. You had, you know, the Nickelodeon Turtle game.
They had a whole bunch of, like, fighting games nearly, and then there was TMNT 3, the Manhattan Project, and a lot of so many. I mean, there's even Turtle games coming out, you know, more recently, I believe.
Yeah, I downloaded you know, one, and you know, it was the way the game was coded and stuff like that. Like, the graphics looked too updated. It didn't feel like the Turtles to me. So I thought that was. It was a fun game. I enjoyed the game. And then it was also weird, too, just not having the challenge of, you know, it was kind of like infinite continues, and there was really no game over. And for me, that just didn't fit the Turtle. I always remember them being very difficult games, but very fun. But, you know, I do remember I had a 13-inch, like, black and white TV or something, you know, probably one of my first TVs. And I remember throwing a controller and knocking the TV off the stand out of frustration.
Yeah. Those some of those early games would do it to you. And then, like I said, even before the second animated series, they briefly did like one season of a live action series. And that's where that Venus de Milo character was originally introduced before it made it into the cartoon series. But yeah, it was like right after the first movie, they tried to do the live action series. It just looked really weird.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's hard to transition, you know, as I'm looking at films that I grew up with and TV series, and, you know, then they get a reboot and things just don't feel the same anymore.
No, it only made 26 episodes. It was called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: The Next Mutation. And they even did a guest appearance on the Power Rangers. I've seen some of that video on YouTube of the Power Rangers and the Ninja Turtles fighting together, and it's just kind of weird.
Make my turtles grow!
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, what would you do? Leonardo, Michelangelo, Donatello, Raphael! Instead of the whole... what was it, Megalodon, or, you know, I don't know.
Like, they should have had the big robot turtle be their Megazord.
That would be awesome. Have the freaking, you know, Megazord turtle, and I don't know, man. I think Power Rangers tried to do what Turtles had become, and I don't know. For me, Power Rangers just wasn't my forte.
Yeah, I think... Without that original Turtles series, there was so many shows I don't think we would have gotten, because that really brought martial arts to kids' TV. I mean, we've got, you know, the Power Rangers after that. We also, Chuck Norris had a cartoon for a while. I mean, there was a Bruce Lee, I knew there was a Jackie Chan cartoon for a while. It was just like, for a while there was martial arts everything on TV.
And you're starting, I feel like we're kind of getting a resurgence of that now. I mean, anime, I mean, I know it's different artistic, different stories, and outside the box a little bit. But, I mean, you know, just about every anime revolves very heavily around some of the same concepts that the Turtles originally introduced.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that the Turtles was kind of that gateway, you know, blending, you know, Japanese culture with Americana and doing that mashup and really making it work and being successful.
Yeah, I mean, throughout the 70s, as we talked about on our first episode, that was like the height of live action ninja movies. And then when the Turtles started, it kind of restarted that ninja craze.
Ninja craze. That sounds like it needs to be a song.
It probably is. Google that. You'll find it. And then more recently, starting in 2012, we got the third Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles animated series. This one, yeah, they've kind of updated. I've only seen a couple episodes hanging out with my friend Danny Ashby. She's big into the new Ninja Turtles, and she was showing me a couple episodes of it. It's like, so they've updated the graphics. It's all CGI animated. And April and Casey Jones are like, I'd say, teenagers in this series, because for some reason in new cartoons, they try to always make the characters younger, but it was actually very, you know, I was like, whatever, I don't want to watch like a reboot of, you know, my childhood again.
You're ruining it.
But I got to say, once I gave it a shot, it was actually a damn good series. I mean, I seen one episode, which I think was like their Halloween episode or something. And there was a whole riff on Freddy Krueger where they were fighting the Nightmare Beavers. It was four beavers that would enter your nightmares and try to kill you.
All right. So Casey Jones with a hockey mask. I mean, is that a prelude to a Freddy versus Jason type?
Almost, because when the turtles are passed out and trapped in this dream world, like April and Casey are trying to figure out how to wake them up, and they think this crazy general store owner they met while they were camping is probably behind it. So he goes to see him, and the dude literally has Leatherface's chainsaw on the wall. I mean, it says the saw is family on the blade. And I'm not sure many kids would get that reference, but I mean,
that's just a straight up Captain Spaulding.
Yeah. So him and Casey get into a fight, and he's chasing him around with like the Leatherface chainsaw.
Did Sid have any involvement with that?
I don't know, but I remember in the cartoon it was funny as shit, because they finally like wake up the turtles, and there's some kind of device that have trapped these beavers in the dream world, because they're trying to enter our world, and they break that device and they finally enter our world, but they when they come out, they're literally actual beaver size. So like when they wake up, the turtles are all like, you know, 5-6 foot tall, and the freaking nightmare beavers are only like, you know, a foot high. And the guy who had been trying to protect, keep them locked in the dream world all this time, was like, really?
And fast forward another year or two, and we have Zombieaver.
And then there was like another episode where some guy built a mutated car. and the car would capture people and turn them into their driver. And when they turned, when the car ate people, it turned into almost like a Rat Fink animated version of like Rat Fink with like a giant driver in this like little car. And it had captured, I think, Donatello or something and possessed him and made him the driver. So Casey has to build this hot rod and race the demon car to save Donatello.
That's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's the new cartoon is just bizarre.
But it's so bizarre, in fact, that I'm like, I want to see it now.
And like I said, Rob Paulsen still does the voice of one of the turtles, so it's kind of still got that connection to the original.
Do they still have the personalities? I mean, that's one of the things.
Yeah, I mean,
that...
that's one of the things that kind of, and I think Jason Biggs is the voice of Leonardo too. So it definitely has a lot of personality. I've only seen a couple episodes, but it's something definitely worth getting into.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's another reason that the Turtles were so successful is you take any group of four friends and you could almost match their, you know, personalities with, you know, almost that, you know, turtle personality. So, I mean, you know, you had, you know, smart Brainiac, Donatello. You had just the cool, calm, collected leader.
Angry, almost emo kid, Raphael. And then
the crazy party dude, you know, Michelangelo. And then...
Whoa, dude.
Yeah.
Pizza Man, yo. Yeah, and of course, move into the movies. 1990s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was an independent film at the time, too, and is probably one of the highest grossing independent films of all time.
Well, I think it was up until the point that Blair Witch Project, I think, overtook it. But, I mean, you think about, the early 90s and fast forward to... Blair Witch, which I think was, closer to 2000, maybe even, you know, a little bit beyond 2000. So, I mean, it held the ranks
for a number of years. And the original movie was, like I said, it was an independent film. They made it. It was directed by Steve Barron and was made for $13 million, but it grossed like $201 million.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing, too, is, you know, really, by and large, no major production company wanted, you know, anything to do with the Turtles. And I think it was Image Line that ended up picking it up, right?
I think it was
Image Line that...
Mirage Entertainment, Limelight Entertainment, Golden Harvest. Yeah, it was definitely... Yeah, distributed by New Line Cinema. So, yeah, it was, like I said,
a gamble from their perspective, but a gamble that really paid off.
And like I said, and that one too was also kind of closer to the original comics, but still not as dark as the comics. It still brought in some of the comedy of the cartoon, but it, you know, the Foot Clan were back to being human and stuff, but and the
bunch of punk ass teenagers.
Judith Hogue is April O'Neil, Elias Kotas as the live action version of Casey Jones. And Skeet Ulrich and Sam Rockwell was also in it as some foot clan thugs. But also I got to give it up to the actors who played the turtles, cuz it was so, I mean, doing martial arts in itself is difficult enough, but being in these giant rubber suits with these fully animatronic heads, to be able to do that and not bust your ass takes some serious skills.
Oh, yeah, and to give people a perspective of the animatronics, in the shell was 60 pounds of animatronic equipment.
Yeah, the turtles were brought to life by the Jim Henson Company. So, I mean, you know, anyone who knows anything about, you know, animatronics, it's definitely the Hensons. And the turtles were played by Josh Parrish was Raphael, which he was the only person to both play the in-suit performer and do the voice actor acting. Robbie Rist was Michelangelo, and Michael Sisti was the stuntman who played him. David Foreman was Leonardo. Corey Feldman was the voice of Donatello with Ernie Reyes Jr. in the suit. And do you know who Kevin Clash was? Splinter. David Macharin was the Shredder. But yeah, it was just the level of martial arts action with those heavy ass suits is just impressive, you know, in and of itself.
Yeah, I thought an interesting thing is, you know, the premise of the film, everything is set to take place in New York. One of the things I thought were interesting was they designed a set that looked like New York City, but everything was actually filmed in Wilmington, North Carolina, so not too far away from us.
Yeah, and yeah, of course, the live-action version of Casey Jones in that movie is so hilarious, too, because him and Raphael are just...
Yeah, I mean, I love that line, you know, where Raph's like, cricket? Nobody understands cricket. You got to know what a crumpet is to understand cricket.
Yeah, where he's like pulling out different when they first meet each other, he thinks Raphael's a villain because Casey Jones is vigilante. You know, they kind of mistakenly think each other are bad guys and try to fight. And he's pulling out these weapons. He pulls out a Jose Canseco bat. And he's like, "Did you really pay money for this?"
Yeah. But I think that line's ironic because one of the things is when that scene was filmed, the crickets were chirping so loudly that if you know, really listen, you still hear the crickets in the background that they couldn't edit out in post-production. But luckily it was a night scene, so I guess it fits.
Yeah, and I mean, later on in the movie when Raphael gets his ass kicked and he ends up kind of in a coma and they flee to this abandoned property that April's got that out in the middle of nowhere, and Casey Jones is trying to fix this old truck. It's like him and I think Donatello working on it, and they're going through just insulting each other in alphabetical order, just going back and forth.
Almost like best friends.
Yeah, we would do back in the day. Yeah, it was. But yeah, that first movie had just so much heart as well, and it's kind of funny because Ernie Reyes Jr. I joked about The Walking Dead is slowly building the Ninja Turtles on The Walking Dead because you had Michonne with her sword, and now you've got Morgan with his bow staff. I'm like, if somebody shows up next season with like some nunchucks and a sai, we're gonna have the full Ninja Turtle outfit. I was watching some behind the scenes stuff the other day, and turns out the original Donatello, Ernie Reyes Jr., is one of the stunt coordinators on The Walking Dead, and is the one who taught them how to use bow staffs on the show. So they really are the Ninja Turtles on The Walking Dead.
I mean, you got zombies. Who's to say that you can't have turtles at this point, you know?
Exactly. I mean, yeah, turtles aren't that far a jump from zombies. And the Ninja Turtle comic book was on Image for a while, so, I mean, they should bring in some Ninja Turtles. It's all good.
Yeah. You know, I thought it was interesting that at the end of production, due to the heat and humidity of filming in North Carolina and everything, and basically the weight of all of the suits that the actors had to wear, like pretty much everybody that wore a suit was like 20 or 30 pounds lighter at the end of production.
Maybe that's the diet I need to get on. I need to get a rubber suit and try to do martial arts.
And I didn't realize it, but, you know, Splinter, he basically it took three puppeteers to operate Splinter. But Kevin Clash, he was one of the, you know, the puppeteers, and he actually voiced Elmo from Sesame Street. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, I'll be damned. Yeah, he and all the actors that played the Turtles also appeared as cameos and as minor characters throughout the movie. So you can play Spot the Turtle. David Foreman was a gang member. Michael Sisti played the pizza delivery man. Leif Tyden was a messenger of the foot, and Josh P.S. Also was a passenger in a taxi at one point in the movie.
Yeah. I don't know. I think one of the things that always caught my attention was the fact that Danny, April's son, is always getting into trouble.
No, she was her boss's son.
Or her boss's son, yeah. You know, always getting in trouble. But anyway, his Sex Pistol shirt with the bassist Sid Vicious on it, I always...
Yeah, and the Foot Clan in this movie was basically a bunch of just lost kids that Shredder had, you know, duped into being his gang. And, like, their, like, secret hideout was pretty badass. I mean, yeah. It was like, there was, like, video games everywhere. There was, like, skate park and stuff. I was like, hell yeah, I would have joined that gang. Their clubhouse is awesome.
And you're always getting all kinds of new fancy electronics.
Yeah. And then a couple years later, we get the second movie. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze, came out in 91. directed by Michael Pressman. And this time, Ernie Reyes was back playing Kino, the pizza delivery guy. So he was out of the suit and actually on camera this time instead of stuck in the Donatello suit.
Yeah, this was a good film, but it lost a little bit of the heart and the grittiness that the first one brought to the table.
That too, and it introduced evil mutants of Tokar and Rezar, which I was like, that kind of annoyed me. I'm like, you're going to do it. Give us Bebop and Rocksteady. We've yet to see a movie adaptation of Bebop and Rocksteady.
The best one I've seen so far is there was a YouTube video, a fan film that somebody made, and their version of Bebop and Rocksteady actually looked pretty badass.
Yeah, it looks almost like Kung Fury.
And speaking of which, that is now on Netflix.
Also, Kevin Nash played the wrestler played the Super Shredder when Shredder takes the mutagen and becomes like a big ass monster at the end of the movie. Also introduced us to Vanilla Ice Ninja Rap, which is one of the highlights. Is not as good as that second movie was. That scene of them getting into a fight in the club while they rap about Ninja Turtles is the highlight of the movie.
And I mean, maybe we touch on it a little bit later, but I mean, dude, there are some really badass raps out there related to the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, just Google turtle rap. You'll find all kind of crazy stuff on there.
But it's all awesome.
Yeah, this movie cost $25 million, made $78 million. So it wasn't as successful as the first one, but it still was quite successful. And even, earned a third one in the trilogy. 1993, basically the movie adaptation of the Turtles in Time game. Because this one involves time travel, where the Turtles go back to feudal Japan.
Yeah, this one was kind of odd seeing the Turtles in Japan. I don't know.
It was kind of the weakest of the franchise.
It still made $42 million. But, I mean,
it still made money, but yeah, it just wasn't as good as the originals. And Casey Jones, who wasn't in the second one, was back for this one, but he didn't have that big of a part. Basically, for the Turtles to travel in time, they had to switch places with somebody. So the four samurais they switched places with were all of a sudden in New York, and Casey was having to babysit them and took them out on the town and taught them about New York, which was kind of funny. But it was just, like I said, that movie did not hold up as well as the other two. And then after that, we got 2007's TMNT, which was pretty much the fourth in the trilogy, the series, because it was kind of based off that same timeline, but it was a CGI animated version of the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, and this one was, I don't know. I mean, you had so many, voice talents. I mean, hell, even Kevin Smith, Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yes, Patrick Sarah Michelle Stewart. Gellar was played the April O'Neil in this one, and in this one, like I said, it's kind of still in that same timeline. Her and Casey Jones has gotten married, and the team is pretty much split up because Leonardo went off to, I think, South America to, like, learn how to be a leader or something, like, to perfect his ninja ability. And while he was gone, the rest of the team just kind of, like, fell apart. Raphael became basically a Batman. He became like this vigilante superhero called, like, the Night Watcher or something.
Yeah.
And I forgot what Michelangelo and Donatello were doing, but yeah, the team pretty much fell apart without Leonardo there, and April has to go track him down and bring him back and put the team back together to fight some new threat.
I mean, I will say one good thing about, this film was, this is where we saw the resurgence of, a lot of the more modern toys, an additional comic series, as well as, some updated video games. So, with this one, we kind of had what the, Turtle franchise had all along. So there was a lot of tie-in products and things of that nature. And, with the updated graphics and stuff, the games just didn't have the same feel and stuff. But, I mean, they were still enjoyable. It was good and it was refreshing. I mean, it was almost like a a minute throwback to the enjoyment that I had, you know, playing on arcade and some of the older game systems.
Yeah, and this one there was a like something with a parallel universe, so they were fighting these these weird like Aztec warriors and stuff. And
yeah, I mean, they end up countering, you know, one of 13 beasts, Bigfoot, while battling, you know, the Foot Clan. And yeah, I mean, yeah, it was, I don't know, you know, this, you know, there was a vampire, succubor.
Yeah, the Jersey Devil.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're just all kinds of, you know, interesting things. So, you know, with so many of these reboots, I mean, unfortunately, I think what the first film brought to the table, I don't think for me was ever repeated in any of the, you know, whether it be a reboot or any of the continuation of the series.
Yeah, that too. And it, yeah, there's a badass fight scene too with Leonardo confronts Raphael, thinking he's you kind of some kind of bag because he's the Night Watcher. And but Raphael's kind of still pissed at Leo for like kind of abandoning the team. And they get into like an epic battle. I mean, freaking Raph ends up breaking his sword, Leo's swords and stuff. And it's, I mean, it gets pretty freaking intense.
Yeah, I mean, I think the breaking of the swords was a pivotal oh shit moment.
And even, and like I said, even the like them and the Foot Clan end up having to like work together to defeat these, you know, otherworldly monsters. And it's just, it was, I mean, it was pretty badass for an animated movie. I mean, Nolan North played Raphael. Mikey Kelly was the voice of Michelangelo. Mitchell Whitfield was Donatello. James Arnold Taylor was Leonardo. And Chris Evans, Mr. Captain America himself, played Casey Jones.
What better person to play Casey, by the way?
Like... And the mad guy, Yatoi Max Winters, was played by Patrick Stewart.
So, yeah, I mean...
And narrated by Lawrence Fishburne. I mean, it was a pretty big cast for a cartoon movie.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's huge.
And with that, I guess we'll get into our latest version of the Ninja Turtles. The
Turtles meet the Transformers.
Pretty much, as we get into the Michael Bay era.
I don't know. You know, the only memorable scene that really stands out is, you know, freaking Megan Fox bent over, and the ass shot of Megan Fox, I guess, is the most memorable thing I took away from that film.
Throwback to, Transformers. Yes.
And a lot of the same, you know, sound effects that you would expect from Michael Bay and everything of that nature as well.
But yeah, I gotta say, like, I didn't watch it when it first came out because I was like,
no, I was about a year behind that bandwagon.
It's Michael Bay. I mean, I finally saw it when it came out on video. But I gotta say, I actually enjoyed the. I mean, it had its problems. There's a few things that kind of pissed me off. I didn't like, but I mean, Megan Fox as April O'Neil, Will Arnett as her kind of sidekick cameraman, but the Johnny Knoxville voicing Leonardo, Alan Ritchson, Noel Fisher, Jeremy Howard, Danny Woodward, Tony Shalhoub played Splinter. But it was, like I said, this is the first time that, you know, it's a live action, but the Turtles, instead of being played by guys in rubber suits, were CGI animated characters.
Yeah, and I mean, that was, I guess that was a thing for me. I mean, you know, you looked at the Turtles, and I mean, they're all roided out and everything, and that's...
And their faces, they tried to make them look like realistic Turtles.
Yeah,
like,
it was kind of creepy.
Would look like. The faces of them were just, like, creepy as shit. But, I mean, Knoxville as Leonardo was actually,
I mean, yeah, cool. It did work. I mean, here's the thing. I bashed on it pretty heavily, but if I go into this film not trying to compare it to any of the others, none of the storyline that I know to be true and everything, if it's its own standalone film, there's a place for it. But,
yeah.
You know, I mean, there was just so much rich history and everything else that I felt like was removed from the Michael Bay version. And
before we get into the good of it, let's talk about the bad. The first thing, other than the turtles looking weird as shit, but I got used to that, they changed the origin story. And this one, basically, the turtles becoming who they were was not accidental. It was intentional. I believe, you know, Baxter Stockman or whatever his name is, and April O'Neil's dad apparently were these scientists, and they were doing some kind of experiment on these pet turtles, basically trying to turn them into some kind of like super soldier weapons program. And the lab catches on fire, and April dumps her pet turtles into the sewer. But, you know, they've already been experimented on by these scientists, and they, you know, eventually they mutate and grow up to be the ninjas they are. But instead of Master Splinter being, you know, learning ninjutsu from his master and whatnot, he finds a book on ninjutsu in the sewers and learns how to be a ninja master from books he found in the sewers, and then teaches the turtles what he learned from reading these ninja books.
So, you know, I've got three pet rats, so what you're telling me, since I don't practice martial arts, they're not going to learn ninjutsu.
No, you're going to have to teach them how to read first, and then they can learn ninjutsu on their own from reading books.
They love to chew up paper, so maybe I should just put a book on top of their cage. That way, you know, it captivates them. In, you know, subconsciously, they have to figure it out to chew on it.
Yeah, like, there you go. Yeah, that part kind of annoyed me. And then, like I said, the storyline was just kind of wonky. But as far as the good goes, the action scenes were just over the top badass. I mean, there's so much things that a actor in a suit cannot do, as much as that shit weighs, that they were able to pull off with the CGI characters.
Not to mention the danger factor, because you do want the person to survive.
Yeah, so the fight scenes were just so much bigger than in the original movies. So that's definitely a plus. Like I said, if for, say, a new fan who is not steeped in the legend of the turtles from the cartoons, the comic books, whatever, as a brand new person coming in and looking at this, it's not a bad movie. And of course, they've already announced a sequel and whatnot that we should be getting, I think, sometime next year. And it was highly successful. I mean, it was made $425 million because, of course, it's Michael Bay, and he throws a shit ton of money at things. But it made $485 million. So, you know, even though I didn't see it until video, a lot of people saw that damn movie.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was a big gap there, you know, from the live action. And then, you know, the fact that you got the trailers and stuff that alluded to this being a reboot. I mean, I think a lot of people went into this expecting a remake of the first film. But, I mean, you and I talked about it on some of our early podcast episode as the rumors and stuff were circulating that it's Michael Bay. We know what we're going to get with Michael Bay.
Yeah, just stupid action. You may not get a story, but you're going to get stupid amounts of action.
Yeah, and like you said, when the action, it was there. I mean,
and the story was not bad. I mean,
this is the Mad Max of turtles.
Other than the fucked up origin story, I think they could have done a better job on that. But other than that, I mean, the story itself was compelling. It was like, you know, once I finally broke down and saw it, it was not a bad movie. You know, like I said, I think the people that were hating on it were people like me that were, you know, wanting to see something closer to the originals.
Stuck in the old school.
And have like kind of a bias against reboots anyway. But like I said, it's no worse than, you know, people hate on the Transformers, but, you know, I kind of enjoy most of those movies.
Yeah, I mean, you know what you're going to get, and it's familiar, yeah. But, you know,
And the turtles were the turtles. I mean, you know, other than the weird origin, I mean, Michelangelo was freaking burned out crazy Michelangelo. But then you also, something that you didn't see in the original movies was, I mean, in the cartoons, they had so many toys and gadgets and whatnot, and Michael Bay kind of paid homage to that. They had so many, like, they had those, like, rocket-powered skateboards and whatnot, and a little bit more, like, high-tech stuff. And even the turtles, you know, you kind of forget they're supposed to be teenagers because they're these giant hulking monstrosities, but like the down moments when they're just like fucking with each other, or where they're in the elevator like going up to fight and the music is playing and they start freaking rapping in the damn elevator as they're waiting to go to the, the battle.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely some humor moments. And, you know, speaking of the rocket-powered skateboards, I mean, I can remember as a kid freaking trying to, you know, take firecrackers, bottle rockets, like all kinds of shit to skateboards, thinking I'm going to propel myself like I saw in the films.
And I gotta say, if they're doing a sequel, I want to see a turtle van. They have to bring the turtle van back for the sequel. that's the only, like I said, if they add Bebop and Rocksteady, which I've heard that they are, that's one of the rumors for the next one, is Bebop and Rocksteady are going to be in it. But give me a freaking turtle van, and I will forgive Michael Bay of all.
I would like to see
Vaya con Dios. Give me a turtle van,
a Bebop Rocksteady. I would like to see more of Casey Jones. And then, like you said, the
yeah, Pearl, that's the one thing, because they have announced, I believe, Casey Jones is going to be in the sequel. I mean, he wasn't in the original, but yeah, supposedly we're getting a Casey Jones, and anyone who's a friend of Arrow, Stephen Amell is going to be Casey Jones in the next Turtle movie. So that's I've sold my, I will see this one in the theaters. I will not hate it and watch it on video.
Yeah.
I'll give props to Arrow being freaking Casey. If anybody can pull off Casey Jones,
it's
freaking
Amell.
Stephen Amell.
Yeah. And we've talked about that previously as well. So it's funny how all these episodes kind of tie in together.
We've been doing this for a year. We're running out of shit to talk about.
Fuck, we're getting old.
So as we kind of wrap things up here, through all of this, what's, say, your favorite thing? What's something that holds dear in your heart?
I mean, for me, and, you know, unfortunately, this isn't going to be something that, you know, they can relate to, but, you know, my best childhood friends growing up, I mean, our friendship was centered around the Turtles. I mean, our parents would get together, order pizza and all of that stuff. And, you know, we would sit around, socialize, mimic what we're seeing, you know, as far as the Turtles, having those close friendship bonds.
Mike was definitely our Michelangelo.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is, you know, I think a lot of people would say I was probably, you know, that guy because I was the one that, you know, I really had no fear, no bounds. I would get out there, do stupid shit just for the sheer sake of having the laughs and stuff. So, I mean, those are going to be memories that, you know, I'm going to hold near and dear, you know.
I remember as a kid making, like, in school, making Ninja Turtle masks out of, like, just the eye masks out of construction paper, and then going off on the playground trying to do Ninja Turtle shit.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I can remember trying to do backflips off the zip line in elementary school and shit like that, you know. I mean, I don't know how we didn't break our necks or anything, but, you know, we never had broken bones or serious injuries. I don't know what parents and kids are freaking out about today. I guess everybody's just wusses.
Gotta get a little bit more mutagen going on. You know, you'd be all right.
Yeah, I'm too out of shape to be a turtle now.
Oh, never mind. I was I was driving to work the other day, and I saw a guy on a green, I think it was like a Kawasaki, some kind of green sports bike. But he had a turtle shell backpack on it, too.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was like, freaking Ninja Turtle driving down 400. I think he even had like a green helmet, too. So he was straight Ninja Turtled out. It was pretty badass.
That is awesome. So, yeah, I mean, you know, the Turtles are going to have a legacy that they're going to continue on. I'm curious to see, you know, as we get new reboots and expansions and things where, you know, the franchise is going to go. I mean,
yeah. And, you know, as we kind of wrap up here, what's your, you know, final thoughts on this cigar we've been smoking? Our very own Ninja Turtle here, the shellback.
Yeah, I got to say, man, this is a very enjoyable cigar. You know, it never really did increase in strength on me. It stayed pretty much medium all the way through. You know, as I got down to the second and the final third, I did start to pick up more. I got more cedar out of it than I did, you know, any of the pepper or spice notes. But, you know, the overall flavor of the cigar and everything else, I mean, I got to say, this was a very enjoyable. I was afraid with this cigar that my concern was it seemed like this thing smoked quick.
That may have been just a factor. It might have been a little bit dry. Yeah, because it did either that or just run in my mouth. I was like, yeah,
well, I mean,
freaking freight train in this thing. So
yeah, I mean, that was the thing.
It seemed to burn a little quick.
Once I, you know, I picked it up and I started smoking, I will say that I didn't put it down for any extended time.
No, I mean, it's definitely a very enjoyable cigar. It's one I will have again, recommend to anybody, anybody pick up if they find it. And with that, I believe we will wrap this up and head back to the sewers. We'll be right back with some Beer 30.
Stay tuned. That's my fam. I hold them down forever. Us against the world, we can battle whoever. Together ain't no way we gon' fail. You know I got your back, just like a turtle shell. Nobody do it better. All my brothers trying to get some cheddar. We all want our cut like the shredder. Me and my bros come together for the dough. Bought the orange Lamborghini, call it Michelangelo. With the nunchuck dough, and I'm pulling up slow. When we fall up in the party, they know anything goes. Check my Rolex, they say I'm the man of the hour. All this green in my pockets, you can call it turtle power.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. What time is it, Brad?
I do believe it is approximately beer 30.
Yeah!
Or beer 1053.
All right, you know, as we said earlier in the show, since this comes out right before Veterans Day, we're kind of keeping the Veterans theme going, and we're trying a veteran-owned and brewed beer. What are we drinking this week, Brad?
This is the Tufelhunden, in my worst German accent ever. But we've got the Oktoberfest-style
it's Mosel by beer. Service Brewing.
Yep. Out of Savannah, Georgia.
Yep. And for you know, anyone who's a student of history, Tufelhunden is a reference to the Marines back in, I believe it was World War Two, their German counterparts thought they fought so fiercely they gave them the name Tufelhunden, which stands for devil dogs.
Yeah, it actually be World War One.
Oh yeah, World War One. It's older now. Yeah, the Battle of Belleau Wood.
Yep. So, you know, I gotta say, man, for this to be out of Savannah, this is probably one of the best Oktoberfest beers I've had.
Yeah, I mean it's been a while since I've had any Oktoberfest beers. I kind of missed. I was too busy during October to actually have any Oktoberfest beers. But yeah, this is a damn good for something that's you know, brewed locally or semi-locally. It's definitely got, you know, a German flavor.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, this is as close to the traditional style. I mean, yeah, you see the Sam Adams Oktoberfest. There's all kinds of other Oktoberfests, but this is the first time I've tried this one, and I got to say, this is the best representation of traditional Oktoberfest and the you know, Mazarin beer style. So,
yeah, Tim gave me shit today when I went by to get my. I was like, yeah, man, I tried this new beer, like Service. It's a, you know, because we were talking about veteran stuff. I'm like, it's a veteran. He's like, hey, dumbass, I had that on tap like a week ago. I was like, really? I was like, I've been busy. I haven't drunk in here in a while. I thought I was introducing him to something cool, and he's like, dude, we sell that here.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, for me, I mean, the flavor profile's there. You know, the color, the clarity. I mean, you know, get an awesome lacing on the glass. And
nice copper color.
I mean, dude, this beer is a, I mean, I'm just going to go ahead and rate it. This is a 5 on my scale.
Yeah, I mean, just a slight hoppiness. I mean, it's a good everyday drinking beer. I mean, you could definitely pound out a few of these in a session.
Yeah, and I mean, what is this coming in at, like 5.2, 5.4, somewhere in that neighborhood? So
5.6, I believe.
So yeah, I mean, this is definitely something you could throw back and enjoy. And
yeah, this is like this kind of got like a slight toasted malt aroma, and like so that light hint of hops. I mean, this is probably one of the best examples of a, you know, Oktoberfest beer I've had recently. And I agree with the 5 rating.
Perfect. Yeah. I'm going to shut up talking about it, and I'm going to go back to drinking it, because it's really hard to drink with your mouth full and talk at the same time.
Yeah, and like I said, just doing some research on the company, like all their beers are named after military themes. They have the Ground Pounder IPA was one of them. They even have a Lincoln Oyster Stout, which that sounds weird to me, but now, hell, I'll try anything once. But yeah, like I said.
Anything, Joe?
Almost anything. And with that, like I said, you know, check them out. Highly recommended, and of course, you know, support the troops, support veteran-owned business, and
yeah, and you can find them online at servicebrewing.com. Invite you to go check out the website. You know, support the troops, like Joe said. You know, we want to definitely pay homage to the men and women that, you know, make it possible for us to enjoy our freedom and sit around and bullshit on a podcast.
Yep. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And we're back with science. You ready to be like Donatello and do some science?
Yeah, dude. After my my stir plate tinkering and successful building with no electrocutions and malfunctions, I'm ready.
You do machines. First off, something that kind of breaking news that I didn't have time to research earlier. NASA has announced they believe they know how Mars became a dead planet.
Yeah, I think I saw. Is this the one where they're basically saying the sun is the cause?
Yes. Basically, the reason why this planet has an atmosphere is the magnetic field around the Earth, you know, holes in the oxygen. And they have discovered that there was at one time water in abundance on Mars, and what they've kind of deduced is that solar storms back a couple billion years ago, when the sun was still kind of new and
being very pissed off,
a big solar flare, solar storm disrupted the Martian electrosphere and literally blew the air out into space. Hopefully we're far enough away that won't affect us, but Mars being a little closer kind of got fucked.
Time will only tell, my friend. Yeah.
So, you know, at some time, like I said, you know, a couple billion years ago, they probably could have been some kind of small life on Mars. But, you know, that's kind of what turned it into the red rock of dust we know today is, you know, solar storms is the current theory they're working on.
As Mythbuster would say, that's plausible.
On to other weird science. Boston has been announced as the city most likely to survive a zombie apocalypse.
Interesting. And I don't know much about Boston. I don't know what kind of weapon control or anything they have up there. But what is the premise? What makes Boston, you know, the savior city?
Well, a study from economic modeling specialists working with CareerBuilder.com went through an analysis of 53 U.S. cities with population over a million to figure out which one would most likely survive the apocalypse. And it was based on four factors. Defense score, which is basically how many military law enforcement sources are in that city, a containment score, which is basically how easy would it be to contain an outbreak in that city. Then there's also the cure score, which is how many doctors, hospitals, medical personnel live in this area. And then also the food score, how much non-perishable food and, you know, food supplies would a city have?
So this is kind of similar to what we saw with the CDC a couple of years ago, where, I mean, it's basically, you know, the same thing you would look for in really any type of disaster preparedness plan, right?
Yeah. Yep. And Boston ranked highest overall with a defense score of 11.52, containment 9.58, cure a score of 20, and a food score of 2.8. So it averaged out to a total score of 53.99. And right under that was also Salt Lake City, Utah, and, you know, Columbus, Ohio. So like I said, basically best ability to defend against the virus, ability to contain the virus, feed people and look for a cure afterward. People like us that are in the Metro Atlanta area, our own Atlanta ranked 18th out of the 53 cities. So we're still doing good.
It's not bad.
We scored pretty high on the containment. I think it was like we had like a 41 on the containment and a 49 on cure. But as far as I think those were both. I don't know if low numbers are good or high numbers are good in this study, but we got a 49 on cure and a 2 on defense.
I think the total score, the higher the better, because I just kind of fast forward. And apparently New York is the least prepared based on, sheer population density. Their food score is really low. So they finished last in the study. Let's get the hell out of New York.
Yeah. New York, Tampa, Florida, and L.A. were like the bottom three. I don't know if we scored low on defense. I think they did not. They only counted law enforcement and military. They did not count good old boys with guns. I think Atlanta should have ranked pretty higher because we may not have any official military, but we got the homegrown military.
North on the outskirts, live up in the mountains. So.
Oh, yeah, but we scored pretty high on the cure, though, because like I said, there's
the CDC.
We got the CDC and a lot of medical stuff here in Atlanta.
I mean, I guess that could be a godsend or it could be a curse. I don't know.
So, yeah, if you're in New York and L.A., get the fuck out. That's all I got to say. And, of course, Utah. There's a lot of, gun-toting Mormons up there. So, like I said, that's another one that would probably... score pretty high. That, and of course, you also have Sam Adams beer in Boston. So if nothing else, you can drink yourself while you're waiting to be bitten by a zombie and die.
I mean, I'd be okay with that. A little zombie stupor.
We'll drink some of that Walking Dead Blood Orange IPA we had last week.
Yeah,
and can't be a science segment without. Talking about some robots and our eventual robot overlords killing us all. Yamaha has built something they're calling the Motobot.
I'm looking at this thing. I'm not... So is this whole thing a... What am I... I see a robot driving a crotch rocket. What the heck is this?
The robot itself is, it was a display premiered at the Tokyo Motor Show this year, and they kind of released version one of the Motobot. But it's it rides on a motorcycle. It fully works the brake, the throttle, the steering. The only thing it's can haul ass, but it's not up to the point of because eventually they want this thing to be able to compete in actual motorcycle racing and stuff. But the balance of it, because it's the robot can't really, put down its leg and stop now. So there is like training wheels on this, which are above the ground. So he's not using the training wheels when he's driving, just when he stops or goes into like some tight turns. Cause they've got the hands working pretty good and the, weight shifting. But if it goes to stop, it's not gonna be able to put its leg down and prop up the motorcycle.
I don't know. I'd like to see a race between him and Valentino Rossi. I think that'd be interesting.
Yeah. Cause in this video they premiered it, they called him out and was like, And he's like, I want to compete with you. I'm not there yet, but soon I will. I am learning and getting faster every day. They've got it up to 120 miles per hour is what they're saying this thing's going to be able to accomplish at some point. I mean, could you imagine getting like your robotic pizza delivery guys or if not some RoboCop esque thing, but definitely a. We were talking about Amazon delivering packages with drones. I mean, hell, freaking robotic delivery men at some point.
Well, I mean, I think I heard a article today that Toyota or one of the major car manufacturers just invested like $5 billion on research and development for self-driving cars and stuff. So, I mean, the automotive industry, and I would include. Honda and, a lot of these other places, because not only do they do automobiles, but they do motorcycles. So I would say that, I think probably within the next 5-6 years, we're going to have some pretty badass prototypes out there.
If nothing else, man, freaking robot motorcycle racing could be the new sport of the future.
Dude, I mean, I almost see this.
As long as Skynet doesn't become self-aware, because... I mean, there was robot driving motorcycles in that Terminator, whatever, whatever the one before.
What was
that?
The old school?
It wasn't Rise of the Machine. Whatever the one with Batman in it.
I mean, I almost see this as Bale. A prelude to, you know, the old game Road Rash.
Yeah.
You know, you have your freaking battle bots on motorcycles trying to take each other out or something.
Oh, and speaking of kind of robotic stuff. Well, not really robot because it's more biological. We have shape-shifting clothing is becoming a new thing.
Interesting. So what? So like as you sweat and stuff like that, the clothing shape-shifts or maneuvers or, you know, does something to kill off the bacteria and stuff or what?
Well, this is it's called Biologic. It's developed by MIT's Tangible Media Group. Basically, it's harnessing the power of your sweat to power this this suit. Basically, it relies on something they call Bacillus subtilis natobacteria, which react with to atmospheric moisture. So basically, your sweat will activate this bacteria that will change shape and change the clothing. So basically the suit that they've developed, which is like kind of a skin tight, almost like a, one of those skin suits or whatever. But as you get hot, the suit will actually grow bigger. I mean, it will open up vents and loosen up and stuff to help cool you off.
That is pretty awesome. That's taken, you know, Nike, you know, dry fit and everything to a whole new level.
Yeah, it's being developed by New Balance and the College of Art. Yeah, basically this bacteria that's built into the suit will contract and expand as heat increases and, you know, shrink back down to normal when you cool off. So you can, you know, constrict and keep you warmer and colder climates. And then, like I said, when you get hot and get sweaty, it will expand and open up vents and stuff to help cool you off. And so it's pretty cool. It kind of keeps you regulated.
I mean, it's almost like a dry suit just for everyday wear. That's freaking awesome. I don't know. I'm looking at the image here. I mean, it looks like almost like some kind of body armor plating or something.
Yeah.
The way the vents and stuff are cut out in a triangular shape almost has like a reptilian skin look to it. I don't, that's pretty awesome.
And they're saying this is kind of the first step, but they're you know, talking about, you know, altering the bacteria to do other things, like even, you know, adding a bioluminescent weave to it where, you know, it can create its own light, and, you know, instead of having to wear, like, you know, a reflective suit, you know, the suit will do it itself when it gets dark and, you know, start glowing or whatnot. And, you know, there's a lot of other applications that, you know, this is just the first step of.
That's freaking awesome. I don't know. It almost motivates me to get fit again. Almost.
Yeah. And another thing, they've discovered estrogen can save your life.
I mean, I would concur.
Well,
we know where that comes from.
Yeah. Specifically, they've discovered that, and as a lot of things that you find in science, discovered by complete accident, most battlefield deaths are due to blood loss. And, you know, when you lose a lot of blood, you also are at risk for what they call sepsis, which is an infection of the blood that happens with massive trauma, like in a battlefield situation. So they have been studying, trying to figure out ways to help save lives. Like, for example, if you do not get transfusions and medical attention within 1 hour of major blood loss, 80% die after that 1 hour mark. Well, two scientists, Ishrad Chowdhury and Renee Zellweger, not the actress Renee Zellweger, Dr. Renee Zellweger, when they were studying sepsis stuff, they accidentally got a shipment of female rats instead of male lab rats, and they found that during certain cycles, the female rats did not get infections like the male rats did. And they have developed a synthetic estrogen called EE3-50, which when this is injected into someone who is suffering from, like, you know, a battlefield injury like this, it expanded that 1 hour time frame up to 6 hours. So it's definitely making it a lot easier to get somebody to medical attention and increasing, you know, people's, you know, chance of survival a lot more. The EE3 or SO, not 50, actually makes the heart beat more efficiently, recruits blood from the surrounding tissue, and also raises blood pressure, which those are all things that will help you stay alive longer in an emergency situation, like, you know, a battlefield injury or any other kind of injury, and help you get increase your odds of survival if you can, you know, get to medical attention within 6 hours instead of 1 hour.
So I guess this is, you know, the female version of paying back the man for giving his rib back. So, I mean, it's nice that, you know, both sexes are coming together to help one another out.
Come together. Freaking song pop mad. But with that, that'll wrap up science this week, and we'll be right back with some nerd news.
We are the Metal Geeks Podcast, and on this show, we have heavy metal, comic books, video games, movies, theme parks, and more.
Wait, comics?
Yep.
And movies?
Exactly.
Video games?
Yeah.
Metal?
Of course.
How does theme parks fit in this?
It just does. All of us Metal Geeks can be found at MetalGeeks.net.
At Metal Geeks for Twitter.
Metal Geeks on Instagram.
And Metal Geeks on the Facey Space. You can also find us on iTunes. Subscribe today.
Metal Geeks.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome back to Nerd News. Yeah, we got to...
Yeah, news.
Yep, so we're going to go ahead and jump right into it. So, Japan... apparently get their own very own Star Wars trailer for the Force Awakens.
Those fuckers.
Yeah. And I got to say, this trailer is freaking awesome. It gives you a glimpse into a lot more footage that, you know, we haven't seen.
Yeah, a lot of new footage, and this one kind of, you know, focuses on Rey and a little bit more on her character, where the American version's kind of all focused on Finn.
Yep. So, you know, we definitely get, more of the BB-8 in action and stuff like that. So,
Which reminds me, have you seen the meme of DB-8's origin story?
No.
It shows R2 on the Death Star, and the Death Star is like, yeah, go ahead, you know, stick it in my my data port. You know, who will know? And then you see, like, freaking, like, you know, DB-8 is like the offspring of R2 and the Death Star.
That is awesome. So we actually get to see Rey introduce herself to Finn. We see a stormtrooper, with a back-mounted flamethrower. And we get to, view a different angle of Kylo Ren's lightsaber. There's also the a quick flashback to C-3PO, where you get to actually see his red arm and stuff. So, visually, this movie is going to be absolutely stunning. I still don't know where the hell Luke is or anything of that nature, but, I am absolutely stoked for this film. Every time we get a new trailer or, some unreleased scenes or something of that nature, I mean, it's just shut up, take my money now.
Actually, I've been reading a lot of the new Disney released Star Wars books now that they're starting their own expanded universe, and I mean, so far the books have just I don't think they're as good as the original expanded universe. I mean, so far they've introduced a whole lot of new characters, and there's very little of the original people, and a lot of those original writers that developed the original EU is no longer working with Disney, so it's all pretty much been new writers. So I want to see more stories of, the people, the characters I know, instead of these like random new people that nobody gives a fuck about.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, for diehard fans like yourself and like so many other people following, so closely every time we get a new release and everything, I mean, it's crazy. We've gotten maybe a total of 7 minutes of footage, if you can, you know, bind. But I guarantee you the discussions, the theories, and everything, they could go on for days.
Yeah, the one thing I've heard recently is apparently JJ showed Kevin Smith an early version of it. And he's like, I'm so sworn to secrecy, I can't say anything about it, but I cried. It took me back to 1977. So that's pretty high praise. I mean, I'll trust in Kevin. If it had that big of an impact on Kevin Smith, I'm like, yeah, I'm a little more hopeful than I have been.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. You know, we're just going to have to wait and see. And, you know, as new things come up, we'll be discussing it more leading up into the series or the film.
With the one exception of the books, there is one that I have enjoyed. It's called Dark Disciples. And it's written by Christy Goldie, I think. She's the one who wrote a lot of the Clone Wars novels and stuff. And it was supposed to be basically the story arc of the next season of the Clone Wars cartoon before it got canceled. And since they had all this whole storyline written out, they went ahead and released it as a novel. So it's kind of like the unofficial, you know, next season of the Clone Wars, and it's pretty badass.
Absolutely. You know, speaking of badass, I'm an old school Warcraft fan. I'm not, you know, into World of Warcraft where it stands today. You know, I just unfortunately don't have the time, the resources, and everything else. But we did get a new trailer out today for the Warcraft movie. So, you know, we've got Universal Pictures and Legendary Pictures, you know, debuted the trailer, and would you know it, just in time for BlizzCon. So that's going on at the Anaheim Convention Center. But basically, this movie seems to be following the Human Alliance and the Orc Horde and looking at some of the visuals and, you know, the graphics of this film. I mean, you know, I very much had that Lord of the Rings feel to it, only with a little bit more blood, gore, and, you know, I guess, you know, less epic walks to, you know, Misty Mountain.
Yeah, I mean, I never really got into World of Warcraft, so this one's not on my watch list, but for those who are fans of it, it looks interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, it's one of those things that I think this will probably bring a renewed spirit, maybe bring some people more into the modern mix of Warcraft. You know, like I said, the new games, the pay-to-play, and, you know, already being charged on top. And then again, a lot of times I'm just opposed to Blizzard's philosophy as a company. So I outside of Diablo, I kind of stay away.
Yeah, I have a hard time paying for a game and then continuing to pay for a game.
Yeah, I mean, that's
that's why I've not got into many MMOs.
So up next, some big news related to Ash vs. the Evil Dead. And so Starz, for whatever reason, has now made the first episode available online.
Yeah, hopefully they'll release the rest of them online as well, because, yeah, I don't have Starz on my satellite. So I've not had a chance to watch the first episode yet. Maybe what's something I do tonight when I go home is if I'm still awake enough.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I don't know. I'm absolutely stoked. You know, I think they might be following suit of some of the straight to Netflix and some of the success that they've seen. So, you know, this might get somebody that's on the brink of, man, is this going to be worth me subscribing? So, hey, we'll go ahead. We'll hook you, you know, hook, line, and sinker into the first episode, and you're going to want to pay.
Yeah, it's like getting people hooked on drugs. The first taste is free, and then after they get you addicted, they're like, all right, now you have to pay the whatever it is.
Absolutely. Speaking of Netflix, we got a bit of a shakeup coming up in the Marvel Netflix lineup. So it looks like Daredevil came out, blew everybody away. So now it looks like we're going to be replacing Iron Fist with the Punisher.
Yeah, it's not been wholly confirmed yet, but I mean, right now for something that's supposed to start filming pretty soon, or because I think Iron Fist has come out, you know, late next year, you know, we have no news about it, no casting details or anything. So
I think one
we know there's, you know, Punisher has been cast and all that. So yeah, and Punisher is probably a more well-known character than Iron Fist is anyway. So I mean, they could still just kind of bump that series back and give us an Iron Fist movie at some point, because I mean, they introduced a lot of characters in Daredevil that are Iron Fist characters, and I believe there's even some references in the Jessica Jones series. So they'll probably do it eventually, but as far as the lineup goes, there, you know, we may get that Punisher series before we finally see Iron Fist.
Yeah, I mean, that I think that's one of the biggest things is, you know, how did Netflix introduce Iron Fist into New York as of right now? I think that's probably one of their biggest battles.
Yeah, so it'd probably almost be a smarter move to drop him into one of the other series, and you know, kind of like what they're doing with the second season of Daredevil, introducing the Punisher. You know, if they have Iron Fist show up for an episode in one of these other series,
yeah, I mean, it would create a much better segue. Yeah. So we've talked about Star Wars. We beat that horse to death. We're going to continue to beat it. But Star Trek. It's been a while since, you know.
It's been a while.
You know, Star Trek has been in the news, but it looks like we're going to get a new series starting in January of 2017.
Yeah, I've heard it's going to be a an online series. I heard it's going to be like a VOD. I'm not sure if it's going to be Netflix or what, but I don't know if it's actually going to be on TV. But yeah, we've not had a. Was it the last Star Trek series? I think was Enterprise with Scott Bakula, which was pretty good series.
Yeah, I mean, I have not followed Star Trek as closely as I've followed Star Wars, and you know, I remember watching some of the older episodes, but I haven't seen anything recent. I mean, I
was a huge Next Gen fan, and also I watched Voyager and Deep Space Nine, and I really liked kind of like the prequel series of Enterprise, which is like, you know, the first mission of the crew of the Enterprise when, you know, Earthlings were just starting to get into space, and you know, it was a little bit more militaristic. You know, like I said, you really see the early origins of space Starfleet and whatnot. So I haven't heard a lot of details of what the new series is actually going to be about, or what time frame, or even what universe it's set in, because you know, now that they've rebooted the movies, this may be taking place in that time frame, so we really don't know anything other than we're getting another Star Trek at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we'll just have to keep our eyes to CBS. You know, it looks like their All Access is where, you know, it's going to be available exclusively here in the U.S., I think, in other countries elsewhere.
There's a few badass, like, fan film, you know, YouTube Star Trek series. I know they film them down in South Georgia somewhere, but they've built, like, an actual... I mean, it looks like I've seen the pictures from because once a year they do a convention down there, and it looks like the inside of the original Enterprise. I mean, they have recreated that you know, look down. Yeah, I mean, it looks amazing if you see the photos of the set they have down there. So, I mean, they're doing a good job of bringing it on online. But yeah, I'd like to see what they're going to do with a new official, yeah, big budget version of the show.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there'll be some trailers and some teasers and things to be released to increase the hype. But you know, for the first time in a long time, Star Trek's on my radar. So you know, I definitely have to give it a go once you know, we figure out some air dates and things of that nature. So you talked about your fancy, oh, we're going to convert sweat to, you know, energy clothing and stuff of that nature. Yeah, that's all futuristic whatnot. Let's talk about the here and now. So Under Armour has released an exclusive Star Wars collection for men and boys only.
Hails to the yes.
Sorry, ladies. And I know that's created a lot of controversy.
I mean, girls can wear them too. They're just... I've seen a few of the designs online. You know, they look badass. Freaking Under Armour never makes anything in my size, but I'd love to have some, because there's saw one that was like a Darth Vader shirt that looked like
Vader
his chest plate.
Looks like yeah.
There's a Stormtrooper one too that looks like Stormtrooper armor, and yeah, there's a some looks like some pretty badass shirts.
Absolutely. So you know, it looks like you know, through Under Armour's alter ego program. They're going to continue to introduce key collections around iconic movies, music artists, superheroes, things of that nature. So, you know, let's see what, you know, is going to happen. There's a note here that says, you know, they're going to try to introduce new styles across men's, women's, and kids in the coming weeks. So, ladies, you might get your chance to get your hands on, you know, some armor plating after all.
Star Wars merchandise. Have you heard that Disney is pulling all the Slave Leia merchandise?
You know, I saw an article on that today, and
no more Slave Leia.
I
fuck Disney. It's such an iconic thing. I mean, it's been in t-shirts, posters, whatnot. If you are designing toys, maybe it's a little too risque for something kids are going to be playing with, but hell, kids don't buy half this shit. People our age are the ones that buy all these action figures and statues and whatnot. So, I mean, it's you know, maybe not release it in Walmart or Toys R Us, but yeah, they should still keep it around and, you know, in some form or fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked a little bit about, you know, Stephen Amell and Arrow and our science segment. So let me,
that was in the main segment.
Or the main segment. All the segments are running together at this point.
That's what happens when we record everything in one night.
Absolutely. Lost. So, you know, Wednesday night was not a very good night for ratings with the exception of Arrow. It was one of the few shows that the ratings actually increase. And
that's because everyone else was watching Arrow and not anything else.
But, you know, people are trying to attribute the rise in ratings by guest appearance by Matt Ryan, you know, reprising his role in Constantine.
Which did not last very... I didn't get a chance to see it when it was on, like, NBC. It didn't last very long, but, yeah, they finally brought him into the Arrow fold. So, hell, maybe we'll get a series on CW where they're actually, you know, doing well with the comic book series.
I mean, I'm looking at the CW, and I mean, I think they're going to become, you know, a prime comic network. I mean, you know, they've seen a lot of success through Arrow. I mean, we got it with iZombie. I mean, there's been
Flash and everything else.
Yeah, so.
And it was cool because there was kind of a shot at NBC during this. Because they're, of course, they've brought Black Canary back to life, but her body came back to life and she didn't have her soul. So she was like just this kind of wild monster. So, you know, he had to call in Constantine to try to resurrect her soul. And he's like, all right, this is the list of things that I need. And Felicity comes in with this bowl of, like, all these, you know, stuff they're going to need for the spell and this giant peacock feather. And she's like, I don't know what you're going to use this for. And he's like, takes it and just uses it as a back scratcher. And he's like, it's been itching me all day.
That's awesome.
That was the only reason why it was not using the spell at all. It's just like, I just needed a back scratcher.
So that'll do it for Nerd News. Joe, anything additional you want to add, sir?
I think I am good. Thought I had a shout out, but I can't remember what it was now. Maybe I'll remember before the next episode. any final thoughts on Ninja Turtles and whatnot?
If you're a millennial kid, get familiar with the original Ninja Turtles. It'll change your life.
Go Ninja, go Ninja, go. And with that, check us out on the ESO Network at ESOpodcast.com. Check us out on our website at CigarNerdPodcast.com. Follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters. We're and the Instagram. We're at CigarNerdPod. Go buy some of our merch at Zazzle/CigarNerdPodcast. And buy some badass smoking shirts at RealMenSmokeCigars/CigarNerds. And with that, cowabunga, dude. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.